Thank you for that introduction, and I'm glad to see we're filtering back in for another round after the break. So as the title implies here, I'm going to present some work that links some traditional soil survey concepts with some new digital soil mapping applications. And this work is a collaboration with some work both with ARS and NRCS. So if we were to compare our traditional approaches for soil mapping with DSM, which I'll refer to digital soil mapping, we know that there's some overlap, right? We sample in the field and we try to extend relationships from one sample point to other locations where we cannot sample. And in most cases, we sample points in the field and then we intersect those points with training data or covariate information at a pixel level. And so we just sort of intersect wherever that point falls within a pixel, regardless of pixel scale. We're applying that value to that point to train models. But you can see from this well-used diagram of the soil pedon and polypedon in the landscape, how that arrangement is made, that when we sample a pedon, we can extend that to a polypedon of similar soils, and then see where that fits into the landscape itself. And the approach of intersecting one point with one raster cell doesn't really account for that variability of the soil that we know exists. Alternatively, we could sample in an area around where the point lands in the landscape. So we could aggregate the covariate data around that sampling point with some shape to try to get at that soil variability that we know is the polypedon. And then use that value, either an aggregate of that value or some other attribute of that same zone, whether it's the maximum value, minimum value, et cetera, to then apply those as training data for each of the points. Another option would be to, instead of using a circular buffer, as you can see there in the second example, we could actually go about this with more of a landscape, approach, or the polypedon itself. So we're trying to delineate similar patterns of soil and then aggregate covariate data in that way. So the objectives here were to explore the utility of different aggregation schemes of covariate data for disaggregating an existing soil survey to get component level information from those map units. The first example is using a circular focal window to average the covariates. And this is something that's sort of used often in topographic modeling because it's really easy to incorporate multiple scales with topographic data, but it's really not used very much when you think about reflectance indices. The second objective or focus would be the hand digitization of polypedons from a trained soil scientist. And in this example, using those like polypedons for where you develop a sampling plan to actually generate what I'm going to call synthetic samples. So you're going to generate points within that polypedon that will then be new training points. And then the third example is to try to get those same polypedon patterns with image segmentation, which would be a data-driven approach, instead of doing it through hand digitization. So the first, there are two study areas here. You can see there's one to the north, which is a playa. This is, for reference, you can go to the small map there showing that we are in the southeast corner of Arizona and the southwest corner of New Mexico, right along the international border with Mexico. It's Interstate 10 going to Tucson for reference. And so we have the two study areas that are contrasting in their geologies and also the quality of the soil map, mainly because of when it was conducted. The first one here is in the San Bernardino Valley of Arizona. It's primarily a volcanic lava field with cinder cones. You can see here on the right, there is the soil map unit showing dominant component. So this is what the landscape looks like. We can see that there's, in some times of the year, there's a lot of vegetation here. Other times, it's a lot of bare ground. It's just the boom and bust of this landscape. But the goal here was sort of a disaggregation project where we have an area of about 180,000 acres. It's BLM state and privately owned. And I mentioned the volcanic field. You can see a large cinder cone in the background of this photo. And so we compiled data from legacy soil surveys, from the initial survey efforts, along with some newly sampled locations, and were able to get about 418 pedons that had usable soil component information. And you can see right away with this bar chart that there's a problem for any of you who have done any model building. And the problem here is that we have class imbalance. So we have some classes that are highly representative, mainly because much of the area is this volcanic field. But then we have some classes that are just minimally represented. So that presents issues when trying to develop machine learning models or any other model for that matter. So the approach here was to compare 8 different machine learning algorithms and then incorporate those circular buffers at different sizes around the sample points. So essentially it's kind of like a focal mean, for those of you familiar with the terminology. And then we have in the y-axis, we have the kappa value. So that's sort of a corrected classification accuracy. And then we can see buffer sizes on the x. And then notice that end of the x-axis there, you can read all buffers. So that's trying to incorporate that multi-scaled information to the model performance. And so we have the number of algorithms. You can read them there. And basically what you see here with this performance is the value of 100 leave group out cross-validations with a 70-30 split on training and validation. Notice that the best performing model was the radial support vector machine followed by random forest. We've already had an example of random forest being a good model for predicting soil properties, so it's not surprising that it came out as important for this study as well. So kappa ranged from about 0.25 up to about 0.43. So that's not a great kappa, but it could always be worse. So just to zoom in and show you the effect of the scale of changing the focal window for all the covariates. And by the way, there were 36 covariates that were used for the modeling, including a suite of topographic variables and reflectance indices. And so you can see on the 6 panels on your left that you have a 0-meter buffer, a 90-meter buffer, and a 180-meter buffer, just to kind of present the concept of how that focal window averaging changes the predictions. This is a zoomed-in area of one of those volcanic lava flows, and you can see a cinder cone. The cinder cones are actually the blue areas on this map, and then we can see one of those cinder cones delineated with that purple C shape, if you will. And generally, the components that were predicted were similar for all the scales, except that you can see different levels of variability based on the focal window that was used. And you can sort of reference that against the aerial photograph as well as the topographic map. And then I show on the right, the larger map shows that multi-resolution example, also with a random forest. And I stuck with random forest here just to be consistent so that we could see the effect of scale. But you can see that there's both coarse scale information and fine scale information with that multi-scale approach. So I think that's really going to be useful as we try to move forward with this concept. So I'm going to transition now to the second study. And again, I mentioned this is a playa. So this is the Animas Valley Playa, just west of Lordsburg, New Mexico, right along I-10. So if you ever go through there, you'll see lots of signs that say, warning, dust storm, that dust storms may exist. And that's because this huge playa is often just bare ground. So when you have the monsoon storm coming in the summer, a lot of wind, it pushes that dust across the interstate, and it can be really dangerous. You can see the playa as a prominent feature in this Surgo map. And so if we then try to have a snapshot of what that looks like on the landscape, again, lots of bare ground. So ironically, I guess not ironically, this focus on an update was to support a dust mitigation project. And so this is an area of about 250,000 acres. We can see distribution of sample points here. This was a sample design, 150 points. And again, you have class and balance issues. So the NRCS scientist working on this decided to try something new with the polypedon, and that was to digitize those polypedons using their expert knowledge around each sample point, and then distribute synthetic points within that same unit to then bolster the sample size. And so they basically randomly select a sled of points per class using a conditioned line hypercube design to represent the variability, and then add points to boost sample size and reduce the class imbalance. And so if looking at the effect of adding X number of points to each of those polypedons, we can see that basically if you added 10 points, then you kind of optimize your model performance. And what you can see then is that you don't have to sample, you don't have to create 300 points, for example, to get most of the model performance boosted. And so we thought, well, we don't have to hand digitize. We can use some software available like eCognition to generate these polypedons. And so here's an example using some topographic indices to generate polypedons in the San Bernardino watershed, that volcanic field. You can see a lot of the features are delineated there without hand digitizing. So how are we going to use these polypedon concepts for digital soil mapping? Well, the first thing we could do is resolve the issue of class imbalance by adding synthetic samples and doing that within these polypedons. So another thing that you can use that concept for is to represent underrepresented features like river wash drainages that may not be sampled in the field because they're easy to discern from an aerial photograph or a topo map, and there's really not a need to sample that point. So this should help to resolve class imbalance issues. And then reverting back to the concept of the focal window, perhaps we could aggregate information within these polypedon boundaries to then apply to your sample points to try to make a more robust value for your prediction models. So in conclusion, using polypedons as training data has a lot of potential to improve our spatial predictions of soil properties and maximize the information that we might gain from these exercises. That's all I have. Thank you.
We have time for one quick question.
Answered all your questions. Well, thanks.
Thank you.